the Gibson County Board of Supervisors CIP work session for March 9th, 2 p.m. Welcome, everyone. Are there any requests to postpone agenda items or additions or deletions or changes? It's hard to change the order of presentation when there's one item on it. We'll move that to the end. All right. I do have one addition. That's a resolution that the board, I believe the board members have all had a chance to review it. So the chair will entertain a motion, and we will. Are you familiar with? Anybody wants to make a motion? It's a resolution that we're going to present here in a moment, and it's ready to go. But I understand we're going to vote on it, and then Mr. Spoonhauer is going to read it into the record.
Well, I move we approve the motion as presented.
Move the resolution
as presented.
All right, thank you.
Second.
Okay, thank you. All right. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
No extensions. Okay. A little out of order, but we got it. So if Mr. Stamey would come forward.
Sorry.
Got something to present to you.
Y'all love doing this.
All right. Whereas it is the desire of Gibson County Board of Supervisors to give well-deserved acknowledgement and recognition to Mr. Derek L. Stamey, who has rendered exemplary service to the Board of Supervisors, county staff, and citizens of Gibson County. And whereas Derek Stamey announced his resignation as Deputy County Administrator for Gibson County after more than 11 years of diligent service. Whereas Derek Stamey began his tenure in Gibson County on October 1st, 2009 as Director of Parks and Recreation, was promoted to Director of Parks, Recreation, and Facilities on April 6, 2011, to Deputy County Administrator for Operations on December 1st, 2016, and served as Interim County Administrator from July 1st, 2020 to September 13, 2020. And whereas Derek Stamey has overseen the operations of General Services, Animal Protection, Parks and Rec, and has been instrumental in spearheading countless capital special projects, and whereas Derek Stamey has managed a multitude of major renovations and improvements to include, big breath here, Treasury Commissioner of Revenue Offices, General Registrar's Office, Central High School Cultural and Education Center, Cultural Arts Center renovation, Blacksmith Shop, Agricultural Center, Business Center, Gibson History Center, Old Stone Jail, Gibson Courthouse Green, Courthouse Security Building, Courthouse Sports Complex, Gibson Animal Shelter and Adoption Center, Oilville Park and Ride Lighting, Gateway and Landmark Signage, numerous park projects to include Tucker Park, Primitive Launch, Archery Park, CarMax Care Stage, Tucker Park, Dog Park, and Pedestrian Bridge, Leakes Mill Park, Matthews Park, Hidden Rock, Duck Park, Dog Park, say that three times fast, and Sass's Corner. Creation of Parks and Recs Standard Operating Procedures, Parks and Recs Master Plan, and 25-year Public Facilities Master Plan. And whereas Derek Stamey is the recipient of numerous awards to include the Marshall Mashaw Outstanding Assistant Award for Deputy County Administrator of the Year of Virginia 2019, the VCU Wilder School of Excellence in Virginia Government Community Enhancement Award 2019, two Governor's Electoral Excellence Awards, and seven Virginia Recreation and Park Society Awards. And whereas Derek Stamey has contributed to the further success of Gibson County by serving as a volunteer and liaison to Virginia local government, Gibson Pet Lovers, Gibson Elementary PTA, Gibson Central High School Committee, Friends of Gibson Park, Virginia Recreation and Park Society, Leadership Training Institute, Gibson Historical Society, and Gibson Youth Athletic Association. And whereas Derek Stamey's ability to engage his expertise, initiative, and willingness to take on large challenges is a testament to his ability to lead and inspire effectively. And whereas Derek Stamey has demonstrated loyalty to the best interests of the county and its citizens, now, therefore be resolved, the Gibson County Board of Supervisors hereby commends, recognizes, appreciates, and sincerely thanks Mr. Stamey for his leadership and dedication to Gibson County and offers him their best wishes.
Speech, can I take my mask off?
Please.
Y'all have kind of put me on the spot here this afternoon, so I've been trying to gather my thoughts. First of all, I think you might have left a couple things off. through. I really, when I spoke to the board and talked to them about my intentions of leaving the county, I've spoke to all five of them, and I meant every word that I said, in that it has been the pleasure of my lifetime as a public servant to be able to serve the residents of Goochland, and I'm going to greatly miss working with all of you. And all of these things are great, and they're great accomplishments, but they're not done by any one individual. They're done by a collective group of talented staff, engaged citizens, and support of the Board of Supervisors. And when you have all three of those things like we have in Goochland, great things happen. And again, it's been a pleasure to be able to serve, to lead, and create with all the great folks in this county. And I'm going to miss you all, and I wish you the best of luck. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Derek, and thank you, Mr. Spoonhauer, for reading that. You were saying 11 and a half years since 2009. That's a lot, and I was asking him, and he remembers every one of those projects, some of them more than others.
Absolutely.
Yeah. This building. So we'll jump right into the only item on the agenda and a presentation and discussion relating to our 2022-2046 capital improvement plan. I'll turn it over to Mr. Young. And, well, whoever wants the mic. And we'll see if we need the mic.
Yeah. I've got a mic, so.
Okay.
Can you all hear me?
Yes.
All right. Today we are going to go through the county projects, and we will focus on the first year, that is the first year of the CIP, which is the adopted year, and we'll also look at the five-year balance plan. And the 25-year, we won't spend a lot of time on the out year, but it is printed and there are copies available if anybody wants the 25-year plan. I will introduce the different functional areas, and then let the department heads discuss some of their projects. So some of our planning considerations are the life cycles of facilities and major operating systems, consumer price index, inflation we know is going to happen to certain projects over time. We evaluate alternatives, maintaining existing structures versus new construction. Some of the financial considerations we'll talk about at the end. The ability to cash fund certain projects. The FY22-26 CIP utilizes $95 million in debt to fund the new Houston Elementary School and infrastructure improvements along Bulldog Way, new circuit court building, West Creek Fire Station, and Goochland High School additions and renovations. The borrowing is within the debt capacity, and we do maintain the current tax rate in our projections. Also, future referendum is part of the financial consideration. So the first area that is of interest today is transportation. And we're going to focus on just first 5 years of the transportation program, and I'm going to let Mr. Kilduff talk about transportation.
Thank you, Barbara. Todd Kilduff, Deputy County Administrator for Community and Economic Development. Barbara, can you go back one slide? Really just want to touch on the revenues just real quick. As you may be aware, we do have two revenue streams at the moment. One is straight from VDOT. That's just to put in perspective, that's a little more for the secondary six-year plan. That's money that we get every single year from VDOT to do some of these smaller projects. It's not a very large pot of money. I believe it's just a little over $70,000, but it has afforded us the opportunity to pave some of our unpaved roads in the county that are actually public roads. And I can tell you the citizens' roads that we have paved, they've been very appreciative. Some of them didn't even know that this was even a project for them. They were very happy that we were able to do some of the roads. And if anybody wants to know a little bit more about the secondary six-year plan and the next projected projects, please let me know. I'm happy to provide you that information. The Central Virginia Transportation Authority, that's the CVTA, that's a new tax. And to touch on that real quick, we have just received a bunch of numbers from the CVTA, which I'd like to go over with you real quick. The first number was for 5 months from the CDTA. That would be July to November. That number was about $361,000. We haven't had a transportation budget before, so I do want to emphasize the fact that this is now money that we can start handling some of our transportation needs in the county, so it's really, really important to us. So that was $361,000. The catch with that is, that's 5 months of gas tax, but the sales tax portion of it, which is part of it, did not kick in until the beginning of October. So it's a little hard to extrapolate from that number what a full year's revenue would be from that stream. But I did the math anyway. It's about $866,000 based on that. We received December's number, and that was $190,000 by itself. Extrapolating for 12 months off of just that number is about $2.3 million. And then we received January's number, which we thought would be less than December's, because December is Christmas. We thought there would be a little more sales tax as a result of that. And we were pleasantly surprised to find out that January was just a little bit higher than December at $202,000. So at the moment, it's a little difficult to plan out some of the projects that we can apply these funds to, because right now we're looking at a swing of $800,000 to $2.4 million. So that's a pretty big swing there, but we're thinking it's probably going to be closer to the $2 million number, which we were very pleasantly surprised, because when the CDTA was first picking up, we were told a projected number for us might be $1.5 million. So having said that, Bart, if you want to go to the next slide, what we're going to do is we're going to keep tracking these numbers. We're getting them now on a monthly basis. We're going to keep track of those numbers and see what we have after a 12-month period. Once we have all those numbers for a 12-month period, we can start to take those dollars and start to overlay it with the projects that we know we have. And that doesn't necessarily need to be the projects on the screen here. That can be applied to trails projects, sidewalk projects, and things of that nature. So we're very excited about that. More to come on that. We're still in the data gathering phase. So, but the actual transportation projects that you see on the screen for the next 5 years, Hockett Road Realignment Project on the east end of the county, that was identified, actually all these were identified in our major thoroughfare plan. The Oroville Interchange, that's a projected roundabout. Ashton Road Interchange, which we know we have major issues on, and actually ties in with the next two projects below, which were all in our major thoroughfare plan of widening Ashton Road. But really, more than anything, the interchange itself needs to be fixed. It is a bottleneck. If you've been there anytime in the morning, all the landfill, the concrete plants, the asphalt plants, the landscaping companies, the quarries, all those on Ashton Road are really bottlenecking that interchange, and almost throughout the, arguably throughout the entire day, mostly in the AM and PM hours. So, those are the transportation projects that we have outlined for the next 5 years. And I think, Barbara, that's my last slide, but if anybody has any questions, I'm happy to answer now, or unless we're, Barbara, if I'm just waiting until the end of the presentation.
I think now.
Now? Okay. If there's any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Yeah, Mark.
Yes.
Just back to that already. Okay. So the you don't want to hand me the mic. So I-64 Oroville, and then the Ashland Road interchange, that's 26, but that's not the cost of the interchange, that's just the study.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, so the way transportation projects are outlined, and it depends on where the funding source is, typically you allocate the engineering dollar and a right-of-way dollar and then the actual construction dollar. So that is correct. That is not the full dollars associated with that. I think off the top of my head, the full project is closer to $20 million. It's a very expensive project, but it's a very big interchange. But yes, we did make, as a side note, smart scale applications to VDOT. That's another funding source that VDOT has for Oroville and Ashland Road. And 2 years ago, we did the Three Chopped Underpass project. All those identified in the major thoroughfare plan. So company, two questions.
Mr. Stoff, is the Fairground Roads not on here because it was 2021?
It was before that, and but yes, it's not on there as a result. But that's one thing that we've identified as the most immediate CDTA funding need, because we already know it's going to be over budget at the moment. So, yeah, that's why it's not on there, because it's already funded. Yes, sir. Okay, and that I'll.
Mr. Chair. On the CIP, we're looking at the source of funding for all of this.
Sure. On the CIP, these projects are listed, $23 million, $24 million, $21 million. And then you've got funding sources underneath this, and it looks like the majority of these funding sources are coming from grants and donations. Is that VDOT contributions? So how much of this then be paid for out of local tax dollars? No, okay, I see. Thank you.
Yeah.
What do you think of the timing of when we'll start looking at CBTA funding projects and or I guess we probably have to have a discussion. Are we going to use it to supplement, to improve scoring on some things? Do you have some thoughts on, because that'll be here before we know it.
I have lots of thoughts, and it's going to take me 30 minutes. but the truth is, yes, we have already, Michael's right here as our transportation manager. We've already discussed behind the scenes coming up with several different options for the board to choose. It could be applying the money immediately to Fairground Road, which is what we recommend first. But then after that, we could put some of the money on some of our smart scale applications, because the more money the locality puts into it, makes it more competitive, which means that there's a higher chance that we could win the smart scale applications because we're competing with everyone in the region and arguably the entire state. So for a very small funding source. It could be, we know we have some bridge problems in the county. It could be applied to that. It could be applied to trails or sidewalks, a few other things. But I guess long story short, we've been discussing internally, kind of coming up with like a menu of things that we could pick and choose from to go ahead and apply these funds to. Because we want to see, if we know it's $2 million a year, we can start to plan really well for some of these projects. Because Oilville Interchange, I think, was $4 million. So in theory, in 2 years, it could be fully funded. So that's exciting to us.
So what is the number for the fairground? You're talking about fairgrounds, the roundabout.
No, the roundabout's still fully funded. That one's good.
That's fully funded.
Sorry, the extension.
So you're talking about the extension. So do you know the shortfall?
At the moment, VDOT's revising the number to the positive, but the number they told us we still need is about $1.1 million. But last we heard, they've lowered it to approximately $400,000. And Michael, correct me if I'm wrong, we have not received that in writing just yet. But they've done a lot of value engineering on that to bring that number down significantly. So once we have it, we have not received that number, have we?
No, we have not yet. But as he said, it went from $1.1 million. Like, yeah. We were initially short $1.1 million, and it's looking like it should be about $400,000.
Yeah, but we'll keep at it until it gets to zero. Yes, what's your
I noticed it, Mr. Chair, if you don't mind. CVEC is new. It's a new tax, new regional tax. Is there any restrictions on how that money is spent?
There are some. I mean, it's really transportation related. It can't be used for just anything in general. But it's our understanding that it could be used for anything that we would consider transportation related. So really we're kind of using VDOT as our guidelines for that, because VDOT has transportation alternative funds, which could be trails and sidewalks, where it's going to be ultimately not think of that necessarily as transportation. Some people think transportation is just roads and roads only. So it could be used for a plethora of things. We've even heard some counties are using it to fund some of their employees. So I think that it's really, when I say fund employees, I'm talking transportation-focused employees. So it sounds like it's pretty wide breadth what it could be used for.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you very much. The utilities.
Yes, we're moving on to utilities projects.
Thank you.
So all the projects that you're going to see and that Matt's going to discuss with you are funded by connection fees, and we have done a 5-year plan with the estimated connection fees that are estimated to be received over the next 5 years, and they would pay fully for these 5 years of plans.
All right, thank you, Barbara. Yeah, so you can see on the table in front of you the projects we have outlined for the next 5 years. These projects are primarily derived from our utility master plan, so when we update the master plan, we also look at the projects. But not much has changed as far as timeline of these projects from what was presented last year. We're just moving a year forward. So as Barbara mentioned, we anticipate funding these projects completely with our connection fees. So no money will come from the general fund to carry out these projects. As far as FY22, the funding we're asking to be approved for next year are a couple projects. The largest bulk of that is for the courthouse wastewater treatment plant upgrade. That upgrade is currently in an engineering phase right now, and the engineer is wrapping that up, working with the Department of Corrections. We're hoping that the engineering is wrapped up about mid-year this year, later this year, and then we can hop right into construction. So we're asking for the construction phase of that to be funded for FY22. The other project we're asking for funding is for engineering for a water line installation along Plaza Drive. What that would do is connect two existing lines to give us some redundancy in our system and to connect and loop in our system to boost fire flows in that area. The other funding we're asking for next year, just at $105,000, is actually reimbursement to VDOT for them to engineer some betterments for us for one of their projects. That's the Sandy Hook Water Main Loop project. So the extension going from the new roundabout all the way out to Route 6, we're asking for them to design a water line installation along with that project. So as reimbursement to them for doing that work for us, that's what that funding is for. Further out, looking at FY23 through FY25, these projects, again, are derived from our master plan. The gist of a lot of the projects are closing water line system loops, boosting fire flows, things that were outlined in our master plan. Other than that, I'll be happy to take any questions.
Board members?
Without me doing the math, maybe you've already done it. a fair amount of these are just improvements versus new service. So,
correct.
So we are just really kind of upgrading and improving what we have, as opposed to there's not very much in here that's actually. That's new, right?
Correct. So the Huguenot Hills. I'm sorry.
No,
the Huguenot Hills water and sewer service projects, those are projects to get existing customers a service or to upgrade their water systems specifically for that neighborhood. So those customers are currently in the Tuckahoe Creek Service District. The gist of that project is to give them sewer service. The water system in their neighborhood is actually an old well system that the county took over years ago, and so that water service project is to upgrade that water system to a municipal quality water system and provide fire suppression for their neighborhood. Outside of that, you're absolutely correct. All the other projects are improvements to our system, whether we're improving a sewer capacity or water capacity or fire flow ability in certain areas of the system. As I mentioned, closing loops, providing better redundancy in our system.
It's a workshop, so
Plaza Drive. So you've got it split up, the water, the sewer, multiple years, which
correct.
Is fine. But once this is done in 24, looks like the last of the Plaza Drive, if I'm looking at it right. 25. Does that mean water and sewer for the entire Plaza Drive will be completed?
So what that means, once the water line installation is complete, we anticipate running that water line right away. So all of those parcels along Plaza Drive, and that's in Centerville right there where our Centerville tank is. Yeah, all those parcels will have access to water service that currently don't. With the sewer project, we anticipate extending sewer somehow to those parcels as well. Right now, sewer's in the area. We hope to kick the engineering for that project off years out. Sewer is always a little bit more difficult to design because you rely on gravity. You have to take it into consideration a lot of other factors versus a water design. So it's going to be a little bit more difficult, but we anticipate providing sewer service for those parcels as well and kicking that engineering off a few years out.
Right. So, I see it as a few years out. So the water and sewer all goes according to plan, entire Plaza Drive.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, that's what I was going to hear. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. Matt, a couple of things real quick. We're using connection fees to fund all this.
Yes, sir.
Will there be additional connection fees generated from doing this? Like, you've got a hell of a sewer. Will it be?
That's
There will be. That's a great question. There will be connection fees for new service connections. So Huguenot Hills, for instance, just like the Hickory Haven project that's in the works right now, we will be providing sewer service to the existing residents. Since that sewer service is a new service for them, they will have to pay a new connection fee. So there will be some revenue generated from some of these projects.
Okay. to replenish the pool. Same question, how far down does this draw the connection fee pool of resources that we have to do these kind of projects? So this what's up there now, does it take it in half? Does it take it down to zero? How much?
Right, right.
Do you understand the question?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a detailed accounting for the connection fees we anticipate receiving from different development projects. We take a look at every project that comes through, the anticipated connection fees, both water and sewer. We have that broken down in a very detailed table. We anticipate being able to fund all of this through connection fees as they come in. So some years we have lower connection fees or less connection fees than others. Some years we have millions and millions of dollars because of large commercial developments hitting all. So
sure, okay, so that's how we arrive at 1.756, 1.122. That's a projection of the existing resources and anticipated resources, and we're building it as we're able to. Is that okay? So
correct.
If we had some additional, we could pull some of these forward. If we had not enough, we have to kick them out a little bit and push them out a little bit. Is that?
That's absolutely right. We take a fresh look at these every year when we put the plan together. If we don't anticipate having the cash for the next year, we could definitely move some projects back. At the same time, if we anticipate having more cash than we originally thought, we could potentially bring some projects forward. So we take a look at that on a yearly basis. We double check that and make sure our projections, we always try to budget conservatively. So we want to make sure our cost projections are going to be under what we projected to receive in connection fees to make sure we can cash fund these projects. Okay. At the same time, when we ask for funding, sometimes these projects take multiple years, so that also helps kind of balance out the cash flow.
Sure. Okay. And last one. And then this $10.7 million total investment of cash invested in the county utility systems, that's what the county is spending. During that same five-year period, developers presumably are bearing pipe as well.
Correct.
And investing money as well. And so if this doesn't show the other investment and build out of our system that's taking place with other people's money. That's the
builder
developer's money. But so this really just reflects what the county is doing in reinvesting our connection fees.
Absolutely.
Is that a fair characterization?
Yes, sir.
Any idea what that other number might be? Is it larger than ours, or smaller than ours? Or?
It would be probably quite a bit larger. So, and we also look for opportunities to work with developers. You know,
sure.
if they're going to do a project in an area that we have slated for an improvement, we can also work that in with their project. They're usually reimbursed through connection fee credits in some way, shape, or form. But we always look for ways to collaborate with development in the area to potentially change the scope of some of these projects to save the county money. So,
okay. Upsize pipes, that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Okay. Good.
Yes,
good. Thank you. That's all I have.
Mr. Washer.
Yes, sir.
Going back to the Sandy Hook water main, if I understood you correctly, you said that was to support the Fairgrounds Road extension. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
So
yes, sir.
I see that, and you can't see on the screen, but on our sheet, it shows that we're spending $105,000 now for design.
Correct.
Just design. I'm definitely in the wrong business. and that's that's like 10% of the overall, which is slated for 2027 of $953,000. I thought the Fairgrounds Road project was sooner than that. Does this line up with?
So that's an excellent question. We try to line it up from some of the guidance we have already received from VDOT. They're a little further out, potentially Todd may speak a little further to that, but I know that VDOT likes to line up their projects, get all their engineering, done up front, but they also, I believe, build in quite a cushion, because they have easements to work out right away and all that stuff.
That's right, and they also like to fully fund projects before they begin, so this helps line up.
So I guess my question then is, we've earmarked this fiscal year CBTA fund for the Fairgrounds Road project. Is it going to be going off until 27?
Trying to remember the dates off the top of my head, I'm sorry. I think it wasn't even going to be advertised until 2022. And I'm sorry, your question was?
So the question is, we're allocating this money to which has to be part of that project.
Yes.
But at that project, is it... But we're allocating monies, we're assigning monies from the CDTA funds this year for projects for 2027. My question is, if those projects aren't kicking off for another 5 years, should we be allocating that money to something that's happening sooner?
Oh, the 105. Well, again, they need that money now because they need the project to be fully funded now. The nuance with that, which makes it a little more confusing, is that it already was fully funded. That's why it's already moved forward. It wasn't until they got through a significant amount of their engineering that they realized that the extension, the Fairground Road extension project, was still $1.1 million. I'm sorry, am I not answering?
I'm probably not asking directly. So, the part of MAF project for 2027 is $953,000, but Fairgrounds Road should be done before that.
Let's see what that's like. I didn't have to. 2027.
Maybe
that's what I was looking
at. This is 1 year past.
Yeah.
He's talking about when we
estimate. So, my understanding was that the project was going to be done sooner, but if this is part of that project, are the dates aligning for both of these projects?
It doesn't sound like that one is, so I think we need to look at that. I didn't see that. I'm sorry, I didn't see that. But I think we need to align that, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we will receive more guidance from VDOT as they make their way through design. I know they typically have a 6-year plan, but as we get more guidance from them, we can pull numbers forward, shift them back, depending on when they anticipate construction to happen.
And I'll look into their schedule, because I'm talking in terms about having their actual extension schedule.
Right.
So I do apologize. But we'll make sure they line up, yes. Yeah.
Just following that, as I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, VDOT won't start a project until both their portion and the match funding are fully funded. So we need to earmark up front before they even start the project, which our earmark funds might not be needed until later in the project, but unless it's at least set aside up front, they won't start. Is that?
That is actually true as well.
So there may be some intertemporal shifting in the earmarking versus the spending to get them started. Is that?
There is truth to that, yes.
But if that's the case, then it's a little bit of a stretch to put that number in the 27 column.
Yeah, far out. Yeah.
Right? Right? I mean, because we're talking about really balancing the 5 years, and it sounds like that 900 and some in 27 is very likely to get pulled in, isn't it?
I think so. Again, I need to go look at their schedule and make sure I have it right, because Matt got the last one, so I need to look at that again.
Okay.
Mr. Sharp,
thank you, Matt.
You got anything? Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
A question on the courthouse area.
Yes, sir.
And again, I know this has changed my memory, though, going back to the master utility plan. There were different options being considered. And I remember a number of like $7 million at one point to really do everything in the courthouse.
Right.
And I know that's been dialed back. So I guess it's a two-part question. Explain what has been dialed back, but then I see the injector upgrade and then the courthouse capacity upgrade. And
correct.
I'd like to just know, is that going to give us all the sewage capacity that we anticipate under any growth scenario for the courthouse area?
It should get us very close. One thing that changed when we updated the utility master plan last year, our first 5-year update, is the anticipated sewer demands for the courthouse area. So originally back in 2015 with the original master plan, some of those demands were much, much higher. Some of the ways that the service area was drawn out was different. The methodology was a little bit different than the approach we took this time, going up with known development numbers and parcels we anticipated would be developed. So Essentially, that lowered the demands, our 25-year demands for the courthouse area. We believe they're pretty honed in and pretty realistic for the next 25 years. What that did is change how big of an upgrade we actually need for that treatment plant. So we took that to the DOC, and originally you mentioned the $7 million figure. That $7 million figure, I believe, got us up to 1 million gallons a day plant, which means that the footprint of the plant needed to be increased. Much, much larger facilities needed to be built. Now that our demand projections are lower and more realistic, we didn't need that big of an upgrade. So we took that to the DOC and their engineers and said, here's our master plan projections for the next 25 years. This is how much capacity we feel we need. what can you do in your existing plant to get that capacity. Their engineers looked at that. They're currently designing it right now, but it's really a lot of mechanical upgrades, a lot of process upgrades that they'd have for wastewater treatments. What that did is, knowing that a much larger treatment plant doesn't necessarily have to be built now, we just need to do mechanical upgrades and do some controls upgrades, stuff like that. It brought the number way down from our original expectations. So at the end of the day, we anticipate saving, you know, quite a bit of money with the upgrades we're currently designing now. And we believe that will serve us definitely for the next 25 years in the courthouse area.
Okay, so the only thing you have, the 1.5 there, and then out in FY29 you have another 1.5, same number.
We do. So what?
I mean, you talked about mechanical upgrades, and I remember looking at a GIS map where we saw like another. They had three units and a fourth one next to it. Is that what we're doing? Is just turning on that fourth?
That's right. So. Not to get too down in the weeds, wastewater is treated with biological processes, so we want to make sure when we increase capacity, we do it in a very planned out way. We don't want to increase it to full capacity before we have that much wastewater that's in the plant. So that's why the overall project was broken down into two phases. The first phase is the mechanical and controls upgrades. That will get us quite a bit more capacity. What you're talking about, what you're seeing sitting out there in FY29, is what's called an SBR, is a sequencing back reactor. Currently, it's sitting empty. Phase two of the overall project is putting that in service. That will get us the rest of the capacity out of the existing treatment plant.
Gotcha. Thank you.
All right. Absolutely.
The last four as examples, there are others in there on the list. As fiscal year 24 and then 25, the 24 number is engineering preparation?
Correct.
Okay. And you said we've estimated capacity for the courthouse area for 25 years?
Correct.
What is that number?
It's somewhere just under 400,000 gallons per day. I can go back and look at the master plan, but it's just under 400,000.
About 400, okay.
Right.
Okay.
For sewer, water, or both?
For sewer capacity. Sewer. Water, we currently have an allocation from the Department of Corrections for 1 million gallons a day.
Mr. Sharp.
Yes, Madam Chair.
On
Plaza Drive, you've got design fees in 22 and 23, water's going to go in, and then the following year, 24, you've got sewer. And then 25, putting the sewer in. Is that the entirety of Plaza Drive?
Correct.
So that's the start of the
That was my question.
At 250, circle all the way around to the other end. And will it do, Hockett Ends goes across Broad, that's.
So the scope of that project is making a water line connection from our existing Centerville tank all the way over to Ashland Road. There's stub outs for the water lines at each of those locations. We'll basically be building the bridge between those two locations to you know, create a system loop.
Okay, so the entire shopping center proper is going to have water and sewer by then?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, sir. The same with sewer several years later.
All right, always informative. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, man.
Absolutely.
Okay, now we will move on to county projects. So the FY22 county CIP is $46.8 million, and you can see the bulk of it is in education. The five-year, about half of it is education, and then a good part of it, of course, is judicial admin with the courthouse and fire rescue with the fire included in there. The first functional area we'll discuss is facilities management. The first two items are recurring items that we include every year, facilities and grounds maintenance, $200,000, and the county vehicle replacement at $125,000. Those are annual allocations to maintain our facilities and our vehicle replacement cycle. And then I will let Mr. Stamey talk about the next three items.
Okay, the next three items on the facilities management portion of the CIP for FY22 include $325,000 for the Goochland Sports Complex. That's actually related to the replacement lighting project. In case you're not aware, the football field located behind the Parks and Rec building and the administration building, that lighting system is approximately 35 to 40 years old and is in desperate need of being replaced. We're replacing the lighting system behind this building within the next 3 to 4 weeks, but that one is in dire need of replacement as well. We've had significant issues with it throughout the years. We're constantly having to go and dig up bad connections underground. It's got a lot of light pollution associated with it, and it costs a tremendous amount of money to run those lights, and that $325,000 would replace the existing system with an LED dark sky compliant lighting system. The next item on the list is library, and that's the $350,000 PROFA-related improvements to increase capacity at the Goochland Library. Below that is the Central High School $175,000 project. That's related to replacing the gym floor in the gymnasium located just behind us here in the theater. The floor, you may recall that you did appropriate some money to replace the gym floor at the sports complex. Those buildings were built the exact same time back in, I believe, 1967. And those floors are I believe, original. And they've been sanded so many times, they've outlived their useful life. They have to be replaced now. You can't sand them anymore. So that $175,000 would allow us to go in and finish that gym floor replacement. And I'll be glad to take any questions.
The library, that's Proverbs.
Yes, ma'am, that's correct.
So that's offset by, we have that much, or we add some to the Proverbs.
I believe right now the $350,000 has been identified specifically by Proverbs.
Awesome.
So
that'd be
for capacity expansion.
It's capacity expansion. And we've looked at different ways to work with the library to expand capacity. We may have an opportunity to expand capacity on the existing building, or there may be other opportunities to provide satellite locations with like a kiosk type of unit. We've looked at those things. We're just trying to get clarity on how to move forward with extending that capacity within the library. What's the best way to use that money?
It's the best time to pump down the back wall, right?
Yes, sir, we did.
Because if we had square foot or had some capacity, but we can't just make
just a lot of money.
Correct.
That's probably the last of the library money, right, on Proverbs? Because it's not eligible anymore.
That's correct. I mean, that we do have a balance of currently of about $350,000, but we're not collecting. It's not part of the new proffers. We're collecting a small amount based on the old proffers, but
right.
Yes.
What is the expiration of that? Do you know?
You have to use it within a certain period of time. Is that time coming near, or is that?
Yes, and I believe it's 12 years from the start or end.
No, it's 12 years from the last time you collect a proffer from that development. So if it's a per residential dwelling unit proffer, 12 years won't start until after the full development is made. If it's a one-time proffer, which typically I don't think the libraries were, I think there's some transportation ones, but libraries were per dwelling.
So do we know if any in the next year or two is going to expire?
That's why we put the project here, because we need to start using them, and they will expire in the next couple of years.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
Wonderful.
That's it. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Okay, then we will move on to judicial administration, and we'll go ahead and look at the 5 years in this situation. And I think you'll recall that last year, as a solution to getting a courthouse built in a somewhat timely manner, we had suggested perhaps splitting it up into two projects. This year, we moved it forward into one project, recognizing that constructing a building in two parts is not ideal and not efficient. And also, with the lowering of our estimate of debt interest, we were able to afford more, so to speak, debt. So we did move it up, and these are also updated numbers, because we did go back to the study and ask them to update these numbers with more current construction numbers. So this is our current plan for constructing the courthouse, the new circuit court building. And if you have any questions, I'm afraid you'll have to turn to Mr. Stamey again.
So how are we splitting it up? The 23, is that all planning and engineering, or is there some construction in it?
Sure, just to give you an overview of how this funding is broken down. The previous $500,000 funding was primarily related to land acquisition. And we've already acquired several parcels of land there on the corner of Route 6 and Courthouse Circle. The FY23 money would be primarily related to design services, and then the FY24 would be the construction piece of this. And as Ms. Horlacher mentioned, we did go back to our space study consultants. The previous space study had been completed in 2017, and we had them update these figures with 2021 numbers and built-in escalators to give us an actual cost estimate that was reliable in order to be included in the CIP.
Is that like a two-year build-out?
It's approximately an 18 to 24-month construction process.
Split the difference.
Yep.
You need to get value engineers that before
us. Yeah, exactly.
Value engineers are
big. Talk to the
technical.
So have you gotten information? Is it going to be circuit court, John Richard Court, Juvenile Domestic Relations Court, all courthouses? Are we going
to
have
all the above? The goal is to actually house all of those court functions into one building. Right now, we're in like a campus style layout, which I think we can all agree, in addition to having a 200-year-old circuit court, isn't the most ideal way from a security and operational standpoint to operate a court system. So
clerks,
the idea was to bring everybody in under the same roof.
Clerk's office with the record room and all of that?
Yes, sir.
Commonwealth's attorney going to be in the building?
Yes, sir, that's correct. And then we would repurpose the remainder of the courthouse complex for other uses and long-term uses for county functions for the county space study.
So where is the location of the new courthouse going to be in that complex?
We had presented to the board a couple of different scenarios. There were three scenarios that were presented to the board about 3 years ago. The first one was literally right behind the existing circuit court. The second option was in the back, attached to where fire and rescue and school administration is now. And the other option was up on that front corner there at Courthouse Circle on Route 6. So
the front corner.
We still have three options that could potentially be utilized, and we really felt like the area immediately behind the circuit court would not work well for a myriad of reasons. I mean, just interrupting court operations during construction would be a tremendous undertaking and headache, whereas the other two options were really what we felt would be the best way to go from a design and construction standpoint.
Okay, well, I just know this is going to be a bigger project that I hope we have engagement and opportunities for the clerk, the judge, the judges, the sheriff's office.
As part of that $1.5 million process of design, we would engage all of those functions of the court and of our judicial system to make sure that we're capturing all their needs from a space standpoint, from an operational standpoint, and then build out that plan of how we would construct the building.
Looking forward to it. That's important. That's going to be kind of a marquee thing for the courthouse area. Any other questions on the judicial administration? So we're meeting, this looks to me like we're meeting Judge Sanders' preferred timeline as well.
That's correct.
Good.
Good thing.
Just in case I ever have to go in front of them, I'm going to
right.
Say it. We did our part.
Exactly. All right, thank you. Thank you. No other questions? Fire and Rescue.
Fire and Rescue. I have to say that Fire and Rescue has put a lot of work into this plan, and really, I believe this really shows their needs for the next several years. So.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. We appreciate the opportunity to speak before you to explain the Fire Rescue Capital Improvement Program for proposed FY22. I'll tell you that we worked very closely with Ms. Walker and Mr. Young, and we've got our projects in the CIP. We actually started to add 5% inflation to all our projects going out from year to year. This was advice we received from apparatus manufacturers and other folks in that business, so that we would not run into a situation where a future project may be determined to be underfunded. So if you see that, looking at the bigger picture, you'll see that the numbers increase, and that is that 5% inflation that we've built into every one of our projects. For FY22, we have a variety of projects, some of which were actually carried over from FY21. As you guys know, we placed some of the projects on hold because of the coronavirus situation that we were in, and we have brought those forward in FY22. At the top of the page is the emergency response SUV vehicle replacement. These are our staff cars. Fire Rescue currently operates two 2013 Tahoes. One is approaching 200,000 miles. And we have also a pickup truck that's a 2011 as a staff vehicle. So we feel that we need to replace at least two of these SUVs in FY22, one of which was scheduled to be replaced that we pushed off in the present budget year. The other project below it is heavy rescue tools. This is a continuation of a five-year program to standardize and bring all of our hydraulic extrication equipment that we have on our heavy rescue trucks that we use to free patients out of trapped in automobiles to one common brand, so that we have interoperability between the equipment. The actual project has progressed along very nicely, and companies 4, 5, and 6, and 2 are completely done, and we did a portion of Company 1 and a portion of Company 3, and so with the money that you see this proposed in FY22 and FY23, that should finish that hydraulic rescue tool standardization project that was started several years ago. Ambulance replacement. This is the ambulance that the final one, the package of ambulances that you also graciously approved for us, three of which were brand new vehicles, and two were re-chassis or remounts. And so this is that fifth ambulance that we had discussed earlier in the year. Deputy Chief Watkins is submitting today a Rescue Squad Assistance Fund grant that could potentially fund up to 50% of the ambulance. We will certainly try and hope that we get awarded the grant, which will reduce the impact on the county. Patient stretchers. We actually started to include a new stretcher in the cost of every ambulance, but in FY21, we had $36,000 in the CIP for the power stretchers, and so we actually carried that across with inflation to FY22. Two more power stretchers, and receiving the power stretcher with each new ambulance will cover that going forward, and we can eliminate the power stretchers as a separate line item in the CIP. Fire Rescue Turnout Gear, we have approximately 50 career members and about 160 volunteers, and all of that turnout gear times out. NFPA requires the gear to be replaced at least every 10 years, or in some situations the gear gets a lot more use than that and has to be replaced a lot sooner. So this will allow us to rotate that gear, but also put us in a position where we can start to acquire two sets of turnout gear for each firefighter, which is a cancer prevention initiative. So when your gear is dirty, you wash your gear, you change it into a brand new or a clean set of gear for the rest of your shift, and you're not wearing the gear that has the carcinogens and so forth on it for the last fire you went to. The fire engine replacement, if you guys recall, all of our fire engines were purchased new in 2006, and we're starting to reach the age to replace those. And so this will be the first of that progression of 8 fire engines. And the cost of the fire engine has significantly gone up, but $735,000 is where we believe that we will be able to start, and we will be well within that figure. When you buy a new fire engine, you have to have new equipment for it. Hose, a bed of hose, supply line only, is about $7,000. And if you have to put all the attack lines on, it's another $8,000. So what we have done is built $150,000 for fire suppression equipment. That is hopefully to cover that fire engine. But also, we are receiving two new fire engines this year. The tanker will be here next week. And a ladder truck will appear in the summer. And we do not have funding built anywhere else other than in our operating budget to cover the new equipment for those vehicles. So we feel like we can certainly stay within those budget line items to equip those vehicles. Our big project that we've talked a lot about already is the Fire Rescue Training Center. The Fire Rescue Training Center was opened new in 1981. Our structural burn building that we do live fire training in is out of service for all types of training. We have stopped burning in that building as of 2014, and the building is in need of repair. The good news is an engineering firm has assessed the building, and they tell us that it is worthy of an investment to repair it and possibly get to the point we can conduct live fire training in that building again. The other component at the training center are our modular classrooms. Our classrooms that we operate there today have been repurposed from other uses in the county and the state government. One is a donated classroom from the 90s from DOC, and the other is a former building we used once for a county office building. And so we would like to replace our modular classrooms. Certainly there will be site improvements that will need to be made there at the Fire Training Center that could certainly be costly. And also, if there's money remaining in that $750,000, we need some storage space for all of the logistical items that we support our operation with that are stored in so many different places across the county. And I'd be glad to answer any questions you might have.
Board members, any questions?
Yes, thank you, Chief Ferguson. Obviously, you know, we're in District 2 now, and I know there's a great map that you showed us maybe a couple presentations ago of coverage areas, and there's a huge gap in coverage areas in District 2. So it's a little disappointing to see that we're looking at more than 10 years before we get a fire station out here in the district. And I think, I'm not sure if it was Ms. Hunter or Mr. Killoff was saying, I think maybe for the first time we've had more building permit requests for the western part of the county than the eastern part of the county. We're seeing tremendous growth, so I would really like to see, we're just seeing a lot of people move out here and getting that gap filled. I understand it's hard, but it's, you know, I wish all of this is important, but I'd love to see if we could somehow figure out where to bring that in.
Well, we certainly don't disagree with you, and we're open if you decide that you'd like to move that forward a little bit. I will tell you that Deputy County Administrator Staney has been actively pursuing property acquisition in that area so that we could certainly move forward with that fire station. I do agree with you. That is an area that we do cover now, but we could cover much better and reduce response times further if we had a station there. I think we would find it to be very busy. I do want to say one more thing about new fire stations, just so that you continue to hear this, so that you're not alarmed at the right word from the fire department. But when we open a new fire station in the future, we will not have a volunteer base that's already there. So you need to plan, and we need to plan on at least 15 firefighters, career firefighters, to open that station. Three on a fire engine, which is our goal. We'd like to have four, but we could work with three, and two on the ambulance. And of those 15 firefighters, we would have a captain and would have two lieutenants, and there would be supervision on each of those shifts. So that is one of those hidden costs that will sneak up on you that will appear in their staffing plan. So if District 2 fire stations move forward or West Street, then we have to build that staffing in. And certainly we'll try to recruit volunteers, but I think we can't start off like we have in other places like Company 6, knowing we have X.
Sure.
Right. Mr. Chair, I think what we've been pursuing is to overstaff and over-equip our current brick and mortar before you break ground, new brick and mortar, so it'd be more moving folks over. That way we know the budget can withstand the personnel, the equipment, the training. If we do that, then you're not opening from scratch and having 115 people all at once and getting all the equipment all at once. Our budget's only got that in it. The other thing is, it really doesn't do us any good to have a lot of brick and mortar and a lot of fire engines and a lot of personnel if not trained. And so one of the things that, you know, it's bugging me a little bit about is this fire training center. So I'd like to have our training be equally as good as our equipment and our personnel staffing, so that when they show up, it's not their first fire, the first rodeo, the first whatever. So, Chief, you mentioned earlier about we can put some money into this location and get better use out of it, and if we're going longer term, maybe other needs. And there's going to be some research study, land acquisition, engineering design, there's some other ramp-up kind of stuff before you get to the point of you know, opening it. And I didn't see anything, I mean, the 750 here, I guess, is to spruce up what we have, but there's really no money earmarked for taking us to the next level, I guess.
Well, it's actually, it's further out than what the slide shows, and this will work out.
It's further out in the, but if you look in on the 25-year CIP, it is unfortunately further out. It's beyond the 10 years.
And that's part of my concern is if we're focused on building West Creek and building District 2 and a lot of equipment, and you know, if we keep going that and we haven't kept up pace with the training, we kind of push that all the way out. I guess I view the training as a very important part of this, and everybody, I think, would agree that. But then our funding should reflect that. And again, that's one that I'd like to see move forward at some point, so the training keeps up pace with bringing more of the equipment and personnel.
Mr. Peterson, to those points, the Sheriff Creasy is in the room. We talked, and I think we both departments have equal needs for a public safety training center.
There you go.
And based on current events in the community, it's never been more apparent to us that we need backup facilities for command and EOC and communications as well. It just may make sense to follow all that into the project.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that, Chief. So I just voicing my interest in having that run parallel with the other expenses we're doing here.
I believe the District 2 fire station comes up in FY, finishes in FY 29, or
32. Is that
correct? 32, yeah, it's the way he's on.
And then the fire training center?
That's actually
36.
It is way out in 36. It's also not known what, you know, one thing we haven't thoroughly vetted yet or is what would happen when everybody moves into the courthouse, the new courthouse. What kind of building and facility would that leave as well for a training center? Those are all things we have to explore.
I'm sorry,
and haven't thoroughly explored.
Location.
I don't know, I think I'd like to really express my strong support for both Company 2 and the fire Company 2, District 2.
District 2.
Thank you, District 2, and the fire rescue training, the training set up, the training to be moving way up. I think those both need to come much sooner, in my opinion. And if we have to move something else around, maybe that's what well, we would have to, probably.
Not much sense. I agree with his last bullet, but again, I didn't want to put a brand new bridge and mortar until we had the staffing and equipment have at least some of it already in the house and in the budget that we know that build empty station doesn't make much sense. But I agree with your sentiment to bring that forward.
And both of that come forward, I think.
All right. Any other questions for Chief Burke? Thank you, Chief, as always.
Thank you. Thank you guys for your support. We appreciate it.
Thank you for everything you do, Chief.
Parks and Recreation, there's really nothing in the next 2 years, so I don't know if you have any questions there or any comments, but no projects coming up quickly.
Is there? There's certainly ideas and thoughts, aren't there? They just didn't make it.
That is correct. We did, when Ms. Horlack and I revisited the CIP, we did evaluate some of the park projects and did push those out into outer years, primarily related to the East End Park. That park was pushed out, and the actual amount identified was reduced as well from previous years. So that what you see on the screen now in FY24, $30,000 for Tucker Park would actually be some basic amenity enhancements to the site, including playgrounds, restrooms, things of that nature. And then at Hidden Rock would just be general field upgrades, fencing replacements, irrigation, turf improvements, things along those lines.
So you have previous funding. It's not showing there, but East End Trails, on the larger sheet here, East End Trails has $100,000 in previous funding.
Yes, that was previous funding for that project was done back in, I believe, 2015, somewhere, I don't know if you remember or not.
That's right, about 2016.
About 2016, that we identified $100,000 for the East End Trails. You may recall that we did come to you all in a previous meeting and ask for an appropriation of proper money to help construct the, it was 2015. It's VDOT, it's grant money related to alternative transportation through VDOT as well as proper money to actually complete phase one.
I guess maybe just a simple way to ask what's on my mind is East End Trails is not going to just be standing still for the next 5 years, is it?
No, sir. The idea is once we get through the design process, then we go into the construction piece of that. And from what I understand, we're ahead of the game from reaching those milestones as part of VDOT's process related to the grant. So in other words, we have to go through a design process, redefine the scope and finalize our plan and meet those timelines before we can go ahead and do the design work and then bid it out for construction.
Did that $100,000 cover all that?
Well, as part the previous $100,000 was wrapped into the grant.
The full dollar amount on the project is $750,000.
Yeah, I guess the question here was for the next 5 years, we don't see any.
It's already appropriated.
Yeah. It's already.
Yeah, that's why you won't see it.
That's why we won't see it.
It's already sitting in that bucket.
Yeah. East End Park got moved to the East End of this piece of paper.
Yes, that's right.
So maybe a bigger picture, Barbara, because it shows previous funding of $100,000, but we're looking at a $750,000 cost. Is some of that Delta, the 650, is some of that county funds?
The reason it says previous is just because through the normal budget process, there was only $100,000 allocated. But then we went back to you this year and asked for more money. So that money is there for the East End Trails Phase 1. So it just doesn't indicate it because it didn't go through the normal budget process here.
And $200,000 was from VDOT. So it was $200,000. We matched $50,000. The board allocated an extra $50,000, which gave us a full $300,000. And then once we went through design and figured out that the bridge that we talked about needed to be a lot taller and longer, so that drove up the cost significantly, and we decided to pave it, that's when we decided to use additional profit money for it. So there's a few different allocations across the years, but that's how it's broken down.
Okay, so this when we look at these numbers, we shouldn't assume that this is what we're spending necessarily. It doesn't equal what we're spending. It's what we're setting aside.
Correct. It's what we set aside, exactly. And we try to pre-fund, like you'll see once we get to Goshen Elementary, that, you know, we've already budgeted $1.7 million towards, and that money's already there. So we just try to indicate that we have set some money aside for those projects.
And the reason that this one didn't show up that way is just, like you said, just sort of the methodology of that prior funding.
Yes.
Didn't work its way to show. Because it would obviously be helpful to understand the previous funding number.
Yes. And East End Trails is, yes, because the money that is in here for East End Trails is much further out. So at that point, that would be enough for another phase or...
I mean, you have like in 32, you have $1.2 million.
Right.
Is that for the northern part?
That's to be determined. At this point, we have an option of continuing south or going north. Right now, our recommendation would actually be to go north with that project.
That's correct.
With the funding that we're looking
for. With the funding that's been identified in the CIP. Right now, the phase one, just to give you an idea, if you go to the CAER, where Tucker Creek dead ends, That access road to the pump station would be utilized as a parking area, and then you would access the trail at the terminus of that. And then it would stretch and follow the wetlands and the creek back to 288 and then cross Little Tuckoat Creek and then move kind of zigzag east and then curve around the creek and terminate right there behind Hardywood. That's the phase one portion of the trail. And one way, it's a one-way segment of about a mile and a half. So the next phase would actually, instead of turning right from the parking lot to head south, Hardywood, you would turn left and head north. And then that would follow up to where the creek kind of splits into a Y. And that's what we've identified as phase two of that trail there.
Yeah.
And north towards Carl Street.
One of the best phase, answer phase.
I've had two.
32 is only 1.2.
32? Yeah, 2032. Yes.
32 to do the second favor. 1.2 million.
That's a lot of money for walking trails.
One person says that's a lot of time, another person says that's a lot of money.
He's
a lot of smart.
Yeah, it's not much when you're spending it. Depends
on what district it's in.
Yes,
right. thank you all. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Information systems. The first few items are routine, our routine replacement cycles. I think the things that are new on there, the next generation 911, that's a state project, that's still ongoing. The 40,000 for the voice over internet cloud phone solution, that is a new project. And I think maybe you want to, Mr. Buzzard might want to discuss the GIS aerial imagery update because that's never been on this CIP before.
Sure. So the state flies every 5 years automatically to imagery for the state. And,
The state flies every 5 years for imagery for the state, and they provide us some of that imagery for free, but it's pretty low quality. What they give us, I think it's 5 feet, within 5 feet intervals, or 2 feet intervals, I can't remember, but we like the better imagery for our GIS site. It helps with our identifying stuff better, and we also like to do a couple more. We'll let you buy upgrades with what they fly in, and they take the images up for road contours and buildings and structures. So some of this money is going towards some of these upgrades that we've identified, and I worked with both the Sheriff's Office, Fire and Rescue, the Todd's Department on identifying what we needed for those upgrades, and they actually, all three of those departments pitched in some money because they were flying this year. So we had to put the money up front, but we split it over two fiscals. The state allows us to split over two fiscals. That's why you're seeing the $26,000 for FY22. We paid some of that out of this year's budget, but the remainder of the upgrades that we purchased will come out of FY22 CIP. Any questions on that?
$4 million and $6 million
for broadband. Yeah, those are years. Those aren't this year. Those are future years. And I think Mr. Drumlight might want to, or Mr. Young, speak to this.
Sure.
So for broadband, we have a $4 million in FY23, and we set out $6 million in FY25. How we came about those numbers are based on, in 2020, we looked at all the estimates that we have to be able to do it countywide based on the grants that we were applying for. So that's assuming that So the $10 million figure, and actually the total figure in 2020 was about $20 million. We've gotten more information since then. We know a little bit more about what the broadband providers can provide, what they're looking for, what these grant applications are now made up of. Currently, we have three grant applications that are active, and we also have the opportunity now, actually I think on Friday we actually will have a call with Dominion, Rappahannock, and CVEC to actually talk about utilizing a lot of the Dominion rights away to get to the end customer. So it used to be that you could utilize funding, not financial funding, you could utilize funding that was in kind. And so they no longer look for in-kind contributions. They want actual investments by the counties into the projects. And so what this is really putting in a placeholder until you've heard an announcement from Louisa, for instance, they put $15 million out there. The reality is what we've been able to find out is they still, both Dominion, CVEC, Firefly, Rappahannock, still have to go through a fine-tuning process of engineering about how soon they can actually bring the projects online, and then also fine-tune project costs. So there could be some areas that don't qualify for grant funding, and so we want to be in a position to be able to also be able to incentivize them building out to those areas that don't necessarily qualify for grant funding as well. So we're hoping not to have to spend any of this, but right now we don't have enough information to be able to just leave it out of the CIP. We need to be able to be in a position to be able to move. If it turns out to be a lesser cost, we may actually be able to fund it with cash, but those will all be future decision points. So that's kind of explained why we put that in there and carried out that $6 million a little bit further out. If we find out we need to bring it forward next year, after this year, with a little bit more study, we'll do that.
Thank you.
Mr. Buzzard, you don't, maybe you can just get back to me on this if you don't know off the top of your head, but basically it just looks like you've taken $70,000 and just dragged it all across and to the rest of time. If you look at, so that's PC refreshes.
Yeah.
And then you have server refreshes of $25,000. But
yeah.
Then, so I'm just wondering why not some kind of factor considering price changes, but again, I don't know whether these things go up or down. But
if anything, they go. What I've seen recently, that they're going down a little bit. They,
right.
Sometimes it depends on the technology. Laptops are going up a little, but PCs, desktops are going down a little. Servers are going down a little. So I've just left it flat for the time being.
So,
I mean, we can adjust it.
So in FY25, you've got Azure cloud servers. You're starting at $120,000 for Azure cloud servers, and that is, again, you've dragged and copied that into the future. It seems to me, the question is, you must be moving something to Azure.
We've got some stuff on Azure now, not a lot, but that's the thought, that at some point in the future, we want to start moving our stuff off-premise.
So it wouldn't. I would like to think that if we're moving to the tune of paying $120,000 each year, that maybe the line up above the server refreshes might dial back.
That is correct. That is correct. That probably should have got adjusted, but we're not positive yet when we'll move to the cloud. So I wanted to leave the $25,000 in the server refresh for the time.
And are you thinking about? I mean, again, Azure. The technology is changing. You might just have virtual machines, which you host virtual machines, then your server, your PC refreshes should settle down, I would think, if you can run virtual machines on Azure.
If we go to virtual desktop, yes. But at at this point, I've gotten no plans to go to virtual desktop, but servers, for sure.
Virtual servers, so that's Azure Cloud servers. And so those servers are not going to host Windows machines, virtual Windows machines?
Just servers, not desktops.
Okay.
Or end-user machines.
All of our Exchange is in the cloud right now, right?
Correct.
Okay. All right.
So, Mr. Butler, can you just reiterate for me, so this first line item that our chairman was talking about is for desktops and not laptops?
Both.
Okay, so because, and is our strategy to move away from desktops based on the sort of future of work in the virtual environments?
Not virtual environment, but
remote
telework environment, yes. Yes, that is what we're doing now. Everyone who we can put on a laptop, we are doing it as of when the pandemic started a year ago. But there are some people who still request desktops. We try to encourage everybody to go to a laptop, but there's some people have a business case that they still want a desktop. So we do allow the desktops still. But it's getting more and more laptops. It's probably 80% of the counties on laptops.
What kind of things are causing, it looks like we're doing 50,000 this year, this coming year, but then 25,000 again, just copied all the way out for network equipment replacement or upgrades. What are you talking about there? What things are?
Do you remember what we talked about? I sent Barbara the information on that. Oh, I don't remember what it was. It was for our network access control. It was one of the things that got identified when we did the penetration test a while back. I remember I briefed you guys on that back in 2x2s. It's been over a year ago now. And one of the security risks that were identified was that we don't have any type of network access control, meaning when someone walks in off the street and finds an open jack in a conference room, if it's plugged into our network, they can plug in and get on at least the internet, probably not a network, but it's still a risk. If we implement what's called network access control monitoring software, it will prevent that. Get away the ease of use of work versus security in some point, but I priced out the system, and that increase is mainly due to that, I believe. But is that what you're referring
to? I think so.
So that's a license fee?
Yes.
And that's for third-party monitoring? Or is it just something that logs and alerts?
It's logs. it's on-prem. It's the license and the implementation cost.
Okay. Question for you. The keypad entry into the building, into certain parts of the building, does that come under your budget?
No, ma'am. That comes under facilities, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's right.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, yeah. You talked about the network security for just a minute. The first question is on redundancy. You mentioned moving to the cloud. We have offsite redundancy of all of our information so that disaster recovery we had.
Yes, sir. We do have offsite redundancy for all of our, what we identified as critical systems that are on our VMware environment. We have replication between the admin building and the courthouse, and then we have a third replication up to the Azure cloud. So if something were to happen to both sites here, we'd still have a copy of it up there. The only thing I will say that is not on the cloud right now, still take back up, is the old AS400, which is the treasure of our mission revenue.
Okay,
Mr.
So we got an offsite backup systems that could be powered up for disaster recovery. Is there any hardening that needs to be done for the access of either the buildings for security purposes on how to access our systems? Or anyway, just give us a thought, okay? And if there's anything that needs to be done, let us know, because we want to make sure we're hardened. The other thing is, we talked about PCs versus laptops versus
actually, just to answer your question, actually, I believe we're going to have a closed session coming up, we'll be able to talk with the board about some of those issues that I defer to.
Sure,
leave some of that discussion for them.
Understand. Gotcha. Appreciate that. Back to the PCs, laptops, this thing. I'm not the expert, but what I've seen a lot of times, the breaches or data, purloining data, it comes with employees leave the building, take a laptop, get in their car, and throw the laptop next to them in the car. Sometimes we stop on the way home, sometimes it gets lifted out of our cars. And here's where I'm going with this is, with a PC in your office, obviously it's a lot harder to purloin because it doesn't move, it stays where it stays put. But I know we're shifting toward this model where sometimes you work from home, remote work and whatnot, so there needs to be. So I guess where I'm going with this is, and I don't know what the answer is because I'm not an IT professional, but when you're off-site, you need remote access. But the concern is the information and the access transferring back and forth between two locations is typically where the problems arise. They don't arise because somebody snuck into your office and took your desktop. So for a security standpoint, that transportation of information and access is an issue, but then also, from the remote, what do you need to access? Only your department information or your, so that you're not, downloading data or, compromising the system or that you're limited, it's kind of a dummy terminal, if you will, as opposed to a smart terminal that has storage capacity, downloading, meandering around through the rest of the system. So compartmentalizing, dummy type terminals, not transferring back and forth. I mean, I'm sure you've thought of all these things, because again, I'm not an IT professional, but from what I've read, those are some of the weaknesses I've seen exposed elsewhere. And I'm sure we thought about those things, but I'd like to just make sure that we're on top of all that from a security standpoint, so we don't run those same kind of risks.
Sure.
Do you want to comment on any of that?
Sure. So right now, if you're a user in a certain department on our network, you only have access to what you need.
Okay.
The same thing occurs when you come in through the VPN. You don't get any more access than what you have in your ear.
Okay.
As far as a laptop getting sold out of the car, we now encrypt all our laptops. Again, that was part of the penetration test and security risk assessment we had done that I briefed you guys about. Since as a result of those report we got back, we started encrypting everything. The talk between home and our network is encrypted through a VPN tunnel.
Okay.
One thing that we're working on right now is, as you know, we have multi-factor authentication on our office portal.
Yes.
We're working on expanding that to both of them. We have two VPNs in the county, one's called NetMotion and one's our Cisco AnyConnect. We're working on expanding that to NetMotion right now. We're very close to getting that implemented. And then after we're done with NetMotion, which covers the entire public safety and sheriff's office, then we're going to expand that to the rest of the county, which is the Cisco AnyConnect VPN, so that they will have to have multi-factor authentication when they do log in to our network.
Okay, so we've got encryption, we've got dual access authorization. I guess you just encourage employees that they're bringing a laptop in a car, take it home first and then make the stops or whatever.
But again, they're encrypted, so if it does get stolen, they can't hack into it while it's encrypted. I mean, unless they know the user's password or something like that.
And then you're able to deactivate that particular device?
We can deactivate the account. We can't remote wipe the device if it's a laptop. We can remote wipe phones, but not laptops.
Track it?
No way to track it. Unless it had some of the sheriff's vehicles have GPS built into their laptops, but most of the Apple laptops don't have that.
I don't want to expose any weaknesses here in the public forum, but thank you for the presentation. Thank you.
Any other questions on IT? Thank you, Mr. President. Appreciate it. It's 3:30. We've been at it an hour and a half. Do we want to take a stretch break? All right, we'll come back in.
I would say no.
And 20 minutes still, or so, 8 or 9 minutes.
That's good. Yeah.